The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
I want to welcome you to the Free Library of Philadelphia. I'm Elizabeth Richard, and this evening's lecture is in memory of my mother, Barbara Gaughan Day. She would have been inspired by the work of this evening's speaker, and I'm very proud to make this introduction this evening. As you saw in the brief video that just aired, the Free Library is dedicated to advancing literacy, guiding learning, and inspiring curiosity. From its award-winning author events series to thought-provoking programs like the upcoming American Presidency Series, which will present compelling programs throughout the presidential election season. Many of the library's most beloved programs and services are made possible only through the help of private support. A gift of whatever amount you are able helps the Free Library transform lives. Please make your gift online at freelibrary.org/support. You can also sign up online for an instant virtual library card, which gives you access to our digital offerings, including ebooks and streaming movies. If you do not currently have a library card, you can sign up for one right now or while waiting in line to have your book signed. It's that quick. It's now my pleasure to introduce Nobel Peace Prize winning lawyer, Shireen Ebadi. Born in Iran and spending most of her life in Tehran, after earning her law degree, she became the first woman in Iran to serve as a judge. Following the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, she was demoted because under the new rule, women could not hold such jobs. It was nearly 15 years before she reobtained her lawyer's license, at which point she began ardent legal work on behalf of women and children. This pioneering work led her to become the first Muslim woman and the first Iranian to win the Nobel Peace Prize. Her new book, Until We Are Free, is a memoir of her family, her country, and her courageous defiance in the face of a government that has oppressed her. Of this new moving work, acclaimed author Reza Aslan says, Shireen Ebadi is quite simply the most vital voice for freedom and human rights in Iran. This evening, Ms. Ebadi will have the assistance of a translator, Ms. Shireen Ershadi, who is a law school friend. We are so pleased to have her with us this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ms. Ebadi to the Free Library.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for being with us. We are looking forward to a wonderful conversation tonight. And as always, we have some time at the end for your questions for Dr. Ebadi. I'd also like to introduce her translator, whose name is also Shireen Ershadi, and they are law school classmates. So this is an opportunity for them to spend some quality time together. So with that said, I would just encourage you to prepare some questions, and we'll budget some time for that toward the end of our interview. Dr. Ebadi, let's start here. When you were working as a human rights attorney in Iran, the government monitored your activity everywhere you went. They shut down your office. They came after your family. They threatened your life. What was it that they feared so much about you?
اولش زبیدین سلام میکنم از بخیر بگم خدمت حضار گرامی خیلی ممنون از اینکه آمدید و متشکرم از دانشگاه که این فرصت رو برای من فراهم کرد که با شما صحبت بکنم.
First, I want to say good evening to everyone and thank everyone for being here and also the library for having provided me the opportunity to be here and talk to you.
حکومت های غیر دموکراتیک از اینکه اعمالشون افشا بشه خوششون نمیاد و به همین دلیل با مدافعان حقوق بشر که بیشترین وظیفه‌شون افشاگری نقض حقوق بشره خیلی به سختی رفتار میکنن.
So non-democratic governments usually don't like their activities to be relieved and to be revealed, and they don't want other people to know what they are doing. So they're very much against people who work in the human rights field, and what they do is criticize and reveal what the governments are doing.
به همین دلیله که می‌بینیم در حکومت‌های غیر دموکراتیک هم ژورنالیست‌ها خیلی تحت فشارن، مدافعین حقوق بشر خیلی تحت فشارن و به طور کلی آزادی بیان نیست. در حقیقت اینا میخوان هر کاری که میکنن مخفی بماند.
This is why we see in non-democratic countries journalists are in prison, human rights activists are in prison. There is no freedom of speech, and what these governments want to do in secret.
So since you mentioned journalists and others who are being arrested there, we follow the story of Jason Rezaian, the journalist from the Washington Post. The Iranian government has been detaining and arresting many people with dual citizenship. What do you think it is that the government is after? Why are they doing that?
برای اینکه از اونها به عنوان گروگان استفاده کنه که بعداً با زندانیای خودش مبادله بکنه، چون که در مورد جیسون رضایان یا امیر حکمتی و سعید عابدینی دیدیم.
First they want to use them as hostages so that they can swap them when other prisoners are being released. We saw that in the case of Jason Rezaian, Amir Hikmati and Saeed Abedini.
یا قبلش هم در مورد سارا شورد و دو دوست کوهنوردش که دستگیر شده بودن این دیدیم که اینها به محض اینکه پاشون رو گذاشتن تو ایران فوراً اینا رو دستگیر کردن و به اینا اتهام جاسوسی زدن، اما بعدم خیلی راحت ولشون کردن در ازای معاملاتی که با حکومت اینجا داشتن.
And also in the case of the three hikers, Sarah Short and her friends. And we saw that as soon as they stepped on the Iranian land, they were accused of espionage and were, of course, taken to prison and kept for a while. But then a few months later, a number of months later, they were released and swapped. And all of those accusations disappeared.
علاوه بر این عامل، علت دیگر فوبیای حکومت ایرانه که به افرادی که توی خارج هستن یا با خارج رفت آمد دارن با سوء ظن نگاه میکنن و با دستگیری و تحقیقات مفصلی که از اینا به عمل میارن فکر میکنن که میتونن سر نخهایی به دست بیارن.
Also the Iranian government has a phobia of foreigners and also of people who go to different countries and go back. They think that these people know a lot, and maybe if they are apprehended and interrogated, that they will be able to collect information that they don't have.
You represented many political prisoners during your time as an attorney in Iran. Tell us, was there one who really stands out in your mind? Who do you remember most out of the clients that you represented?
وقتی از یک مادری که چند تا بچه داره سوال کنم کدومشو بیشتر دوست داره، طبیعتاً نمیتونه تعیین بکنه. منم از یه وکیلم وقتی که سوال میکنید که کدام کیس واسه تو مهمتر بوده، باید بگم که تقریبا همه اون کیس ها مهمن، ولی چون اینجا کتاب خونه است اجازه بدین که از یک ژورنالیست صحبت کنم.
So when you ask a mother who has a number of children which one she likes best, usually a mother cannot name any of the children. The same thing is true about a human rights defender and her cases. But since we're at a library here, let me talk about a journalist.
زهرا کاظمی یک فوتوژورنالیست ایرانی کانادایی بود که آمده بود به ایران و اجازه کار هم در ایران داشت، ولی که متاسفانه دستگیر شد و در زندان انقدر شکنجهش کردن که کشته شد. من وکیل مادر زهرا کاظمی بودم.
So a female named Zahra Kazemi, who was a dual citizen of Canada and Iran, she was a photojournalist. She went to Iran and she did have a work permit. She went there to do her job, but unfortunately she was apprehended. She was tortured and she was killed under torture. I represented her family.
متاسفانه با تمام تلاشی که ما کردیم این پرونده منجر به اجرای عدالت نشد، مثل بسیاری از پرونده های دیگه، زیرا که قوه قضاییه در ایران، دادگاه ها در ایران استقلالشون از دست دادن و تبدیل شدن به شعبه از وزارت اطلاعات.
Unfortunately, although we worked very hard on this case, justice was not applied. And this is true of many of our other cases because the courts have lost their independence and they have become like branches of the Ministry of Intelligence.
اما این کیس یکی از عواملی بود که باعث شد سالها رابطه سیاسی ایران و کانادا قطع بشه که تا به الان هم قطعه.
But this case resulted in cutting off the relations between Canada and Iran, which has continued up to present.
What were some of the difficulties that you faced as you tried to represent your clients in dealing with the Iranian government?
مهمترین مسئله من به عنوان یک وکیل این بود که دادگاه‌ها استقلال نداشتند و اکثر پرونده های من دفاع از زندانیان سیاسی و عقیدتی بود که رئیس دادگاه احساس واقعا دستور می گرفت از مامورین امنیتی.
So my most important issue was the fact that the courts were not independent. When the trials were going on, you could say the presiding judge was actually carrying out orders of the intelligence officers.
توی دادگاه هر دفاعی که ما می‌کردیم، اولاً محاکمات در پشت درهای بسته بود و کسی شاهد نبود و بعد ما هر چی که می‌گفتیم و هر دلیلی که ارائه می‌دادیم، دادگاه بهش توجه نمی‌کرد و کاری که بهش گفته بودن انجام می‌داد.
So first of all, the trials were not public, so people could not see the trials going on. And most of my clients were, of course, political prisoners and prisoners of conscience. And the presiding judge would not listen to the evidence. They would actually carry out what they had been told.
و من برای کمک به موکلینم یک راه حلی داشتم. این بود که ماهی یک بار کنفرانس مطبوعاتی می‌ذاشتم. و در اون یک ماه محاکماتی که داشتیم و مورد توجه قرار نگرفته بود به طور کامل واسه خبرنگارا و کسایی که می اومدن شرح میدادم و دلایلم رو میگفتم. در حقیقت بلندگویی میشدم برای موکل خودم که به زندان افتاده.
So what the solution that I came up with was to call a press conference every month. And then in the press conference, I would talk about the cases that had not been heard properly and the evidence had not been heard. And in reality, I became sort of the voice of my clients. And I became the voice of the people who were not tried according to the criteria of justice.
البته رسانه‌هایی که در داخل چاپ می‌شدند نمیتونستن حرفای من رو بنویسن، ولیکن صدام به گوش رسانه‌های خارج از ایران میرسید از این طریق و اونها حرفا رو منتقل میکردن و همین امر باعث خشم حکومت میشد.
Of course, the press did not dare to write down what I had said. However, my voice got to the foreign media. And the foreign media would talk about it, and so my voice got actually to the outside world.
حکومت ایران همیشه من اعتراض میکرد که خب تو وکیلی، برو تو دادگاه کارت انجام بده، هر چی میخوای بگو، واسه چی اینقدر مصاحبه میکنی؟ و من میگفتم اگر دادگاه حرف من رو گوش می‌کرد و به عدالت رفتار می‌کرد من مجبور نبودم که افکار عمومی رو به قضاوت بطلبم.
So the government of Iran picked on me and said, you're an attorney, you're a defense attorney. Go to court and do your job. Why is it that you invite the media? And I always said that if the court and if the judge heard my arguments and my evidence, I wouldn't bring it to the public court.
You lived under constant surveillance. You write in the book about how everywhere you went, you were being monitored. What was it like living that way, knowing that you and your family were in constant danger? How did you cope with that?
ببینید هر چیزی یک بهایی داره. وقتی که شما میخواین پی‌اچ‌دی بگیرین، کسی میخواد پی‌اچ‌دی بگیره، چند سال از عمرش رو بسی تو دانشگاه بگذرونه. این بهای دانشی که بسی پرداخته بشه.
There is a price for everything. For example, if you want to get a PhD, you have to spend years at the university. This is the price that you pay for knowledge.
آزادی و دموکراسی هم بهایی داره. ملتی که میخواد به دموکراسی برسه باید حاضر بشه بهاش رو بده. چنانی که اینجا هم پدران شما قبلا بهای زیادی برای استقلال و آزادی دادن.
So is freedom and democracy. There's a price for freedom and democracy, and the nation that wants democracy has to pay the price for democracy. And I am sure that your fathers and forefathers have paid the price for democracy in this country.
اما این گونه مواقع همیشه یک سوالی پیش میاد و اون این است که چرا من باید این هزینه رو بدم و دیگران نه.
But usually one asks this question, why me? Why am I who has to pay the price for it? Why not the others?
مسئله این است که اگر کسی به اون چه که به هدفی که داره اعتقاد داشته باشه، به راهی که میره اعتقاد داشته باشه، هر سختی رو میتونه تحمل بکنه. مهم اعتقاد انسان هاست.
So if you believe in your goal, if you know the path that you want to take, then you will do it. What counts is having faith, is believing in what you want to do and the path that you want to take in life.
و زندگی من نشون داده که اعتقاد واقعی به دموکراسی دارم، حاضرم هر باهایشم بپردازم.
And my life has proven that I believe in democracy and I have paid the price for it and will pay the price for it.
Well, speaking of that, you've paid a very heavy price. Lost your home, lost your husband, your law practice was shut down. Do you have any regrets?
یک لحظه هم پشیمان نیستم و بایستی بگم که متاسفانه کسانی که هزینه های بیشتری هم پرداختن در ایران کم نیستن. کسانی که جانشون رو در این راه گذاشتن، کسانی که اعدام شدن، کسانی که بچه هاشون رو دادن.
Not even for a moment. I never regret. And I have to say that unfortunately many, many people have died in this path. Many people have lost their lives. Many people have lost their family. Many people have lost their children.
الان تعدادی از همکاران من توی زندان هستن. از جمله بذارید یاد کنم از یک وکیل دادگستری که بخوام همین که همکار منه و همون کارهای منم تو انجیو با هم می‌کردیم، آقای سلطانی 13 سال حبس محکوم شده و الان سال چهارم زندانشه.
At this time I want to name one of my colleagues. His name is Mr. Soltani. He is an attorney who did the same kind of work that I did, and we worked together in my NGO. He has received 13 years of imprisonment. This is his fourth year in prison now.
So you are now living in exile, but certainly watching very closely what happens in Iran. What do you think about the Iran nuclear deal?
من با توافق هسته‌ای موافق هستم، زیرا باعث شد که تحریم‌ها به مقدار زیادی لغو و یا تعلیق بشه و این به نفع مردم بنی که تحریم ها باعث فقر مردم شده بود.
I am in agreement with the nuclear deal. The reason for it is that the economic sanctions have been either removed or suspended, the majority of them, and the economic sanctions harmed the people and resulted in the poverty of people more and more.
ضمن اینکه اگر به خاطر داشته باشید پرزیدنت اوباما چند بار خطاب به کنگره گفت اگر توافق نکنیم گزینه دیگر جنگ خواهد بود و طبیعتا جنگ گزینه خوبی نیست نه به نفع ماست و نه به نفع آمریکا.
Besides, if you remember, President Obama stated numerous times, and when he was talking to Congress, he said that the other option or alternative would be war. And of course, war is not good for anyone, neither for us nor for anyone else.
توافق هسته‌ای یک دوران راستی آزمایی داره که در برخی از موارد 8 و در برخی از امور 15 ساله و من امیدوارم که این دوران راستی آزمایی به راحتی تموم بشه و از طرف آمریکا یا ایران به هم نخوره.
So yes, this nuclear deal, there are specific periods to see if it works out and like truce commissions and there is one some of the conditions in an 8th year period, some 15 years. And I hope that both countries, Iran and America, will observe all of the conditions and not violate it.
Some people say that the United States should have used human rights as a bargaining chip in those negotiations. Do you agree?
دولت ایران از ابتدا اعلام کرد که حاضر نیست راجع به حقوق بشر در این مذاکرات صحبتی بشه.
The government of Iran stated from the beginning that it was not going to talk on the issue of human rights.
اما برای اینکه یک حکومتی رو وادار به احترام به حقوق بشر کرد، راه‌های متفاوتی وجود داره.
But in order to make a government respect human rights, there are different ways.
تحریم اقتصادی وضعیت حقوق بشر رو بهتر نمی‌کنه.
Economic sanctions do not better the situation of human rights.
باعث تغییر رژیم هم نمیشه.
And it's not, and they're not going to topple a regime.
نمونش کره شمالیه که سالهاست تحت سنگین‌ترین تحریم هاست، اما نه رژیم ساقط شده و نه اینکه رفتارش با مردم بهتر شده. فقط این تحریم ها باعث شده که مردم کره شمالی روز به روز گرسنه تر و فقیر تر میشن.
The best example of it is North Korea. It's been years that the most serious sanctions have been placed against North Korea. But the regime has not been toppled and the behavior of the regime towards its people has not been changed. The only result has been that the people have gotten poorer and poorer.
برای بهتر شدن وضعیت حقوق بشر، من همواره معتقدم که تحریم‌ها بایستی متوجه شخص یا اشخاصی که مرتکب نقض حقوق بشر شده اند بشود.
Therefore, when it comes to sanctions, I always believe that sanctions should be placed against the person or those who have violated human rights.
میشه لیستی مفصل از کسانی که به نوعی در حکومت هستند تهیه کرد و اینها رو تو هیچ کشوری راه نداد و اموالی اگر دارند مصادره کرد.
So a roster of the people who are in the government can be prepared and not let these people into any other countries. And if they do have property in other countries, that those properties be confiscated.
و یا تحریم‌هایی رو در نظر گرفت که حکومت رو تضعیف بکنه اما به مردم صدمه نزنه، که من یه نمونه‌شو میگم.
Or use sanctions that weaken the government but not the people. And I'll give you an example of that now.
دولت ایران تلویزیون غیر فارسی زبان به زبان‌های انگلیسی، عربی، اسپانیش و چند زبان دیگه داره که از اون طریق برای خودش پروپاگاندا میکنه، نفرت پراکنی میکنه و تبلیغاتش رو ارائه میده.
So the government of Iran has programs, television programs that are broadcasted for outside of Iran and they're in different languages, English, Arabic, Spanish and even other languages. They spread hatred and all of these programs are of course propaganda programs for the government of Iran.
اینها روی ساتلایت های اروپایی و آمریکایی برنامه پخش میکنن و عمدتا روی ساتلایت یوتلسات که متعلق است سهام عمدش متعلق به دولت فرانسه. و حالا صحبت من این است که چرا اجازه استفاده از ساتلایت رو به دولت ایران میدید؟ بیایید بلندگوهای تبلیغاتی دولت رو قطع کنید.
So they usually use American or European satellites. Mostly they have been using Eutelsat. The majority of the stocks of that company belong to the French people. And I would say that the best thing to do is to cut off the microphones of the governments. Why hurt people?
همچنین من با قانون جدید ویزا که تصویب شد در آمریکا مخالفم، برای اینکه این فقط به ایرانی ها صدمه میزنه.
Also, I am against the new visa law that was passed in the United States because that only hurts the Iranian people.
اگر با حکومت ایران مسئله دارید، خب حکومت رو مورد هدف قرار بدید. چرا کاری میکنید که مردم ایران تحت فشار قرار بگیرن؟
If you have a problem with the government of Iran, bring it to the government of Iran. Why place the pressure on the people of Iran?
And this is regarding the recent decision by Congress to tighten the waiver on visas, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. What impact do you see it having on people who want and need to travel internationally?
خب طبیعتاً قبل از این قانون تعدادی از ایرانی‌ها که می‌خواستن بیان اینجا احتیاج به ویزا نداشتن. الان همه بایستی ویزا بگیرن و با تشریفاتی که به هر حال طول میکشه به صرف اینکه متولد ایران هستن.
So in the past, not all Iranians needed visas to come to the United States. Now, any Iranian, simply because they were born in Iran, have to apply for a visa to come to the United States, and sometimes the formalities take long.
و با این ترتیب شما افرادی رو که حتی پاسپورت اروپایی دارن و سالهاست ایران هم نرفتن یک محدودیتی براشون ایجاد میکنید.
Therefore, it's like restricting people who have lived in Europe for years and who do have a European passport, but then cannot travel easily to the United States.
What about the recent elections in Iran? Some reformists, women, made some gains in parliament. Are you encouraged by the results of the election?
باید بگم که ایران کشوری است که زنهاش بیش از 50 ساله که حق رأی به دست آوردن رفتن به پارلمان، حتی قبل از زنان سوئیس زنان ایران حق رأی داشتن.
So I have to say first that the women of Iran gained the right to vote over 50 years ago and they have been elected to the parliament even before women in Switzerland gained the right to vote.
در انتخابات اخیر که تعداد بیشتری به نسبت قبل نماینده زن انتخاب شد، فقط 8% نمایندگان زنند و این رقم برای کشوری مثل ایران با اون سابقه تمدن و اینقدر زنان فرهیخته‌ای که داره، برای اینکه ما بیش از 60% از دانشجویان دانشگاه هامون دخترن، این تعداد نماینده بسیار بسیار کمه.
And in the recent elections only 8% are women And with regards to the civilization that we have and the number of educated women in Iran, as you know, over 60% of the university students in Iran are female. So with all these meritorious women in Iran, 8% is really nothing.
What is life like for women in Iran today?
زندگی برای زنان در ایران امروز به معنای مبارزه دائمی هر روزه علیه حکومت و قوانین تبعیض‌آمیزی است که وضع کرده.
Life in Iran for women today is a continuous struggle against the government and the discriminatory laws that it has passed.
بعد از انقلاب 1979 قوانین تبعیض‌آمیز زیادی علیه زنان تصویب شد.
After the 1979 revolution, many discriminatory laws were passed against women.
جالب است که بدانید بعد از انقلاب چند ماه چهار یا پنج ماه بعد از انقلاب یعنی هنوز زمانی که قانون اساسی تصویب نشده بود یا قوانین اقتصادی ایران مشخص نبود که اصولا اقتصاد دولتی خصوصی چیه و قوانین مثلا پارلمان نداشتیم هنوز و شورای انقلاب کشور رو اداره میکرد اولین قانونی که وضع کردن این بود که مردا میتونن 4 تا زن بگیرن انگار که ما انقلاب کرده بودیم واسه اینکه مردا 4 تا زن بگیرن.
So you may find it interesting to know that at the beginning of the revolution, before we had a constitution, before we had a parliament, before we knew whether our economy would be a governmental run economy or a private economy, before any laws were passed and the country was being run by the Revolutionary Council, they passed a law. And you know what that law was? A man can marry 4 wives. That was the first law that was passed. It is as if we rose up and the revolution occurred just for men to be able to marry 4 wives.
و بعد از اون مرتب قوانین تبعیض‌آمیز به تصویب رسید و زنها به طور دائم و روزمره در مخالفت با وضعیت تبعیض‌آمیز هستند.
And after that, many discriminatory laws were passed in Iran. That's why women are in continuous struggle in order to remove and get rid of these discriminatory laws.
و متاسفانه تعدادی حدود بیش از 100 زن فمینیست فعال در زندان داریم که اینها دستگیر شدند.
And at the present time, unfortunately, we have over 100 feminists and active feminists in prison. They have been apprehended.
من یاد میکنم اینجا از یکی از همکاران عزیزم خانم نرگس محمدی که به خاطر همکاری با من و کارهای فمینیستی رفت زندان و 6 سال حبس محکوم شده و الان در زندانه ولی کن زندان هم نتوانست مانع کارش بشه.
I want to talk and remember one of my dear friends and colleagues whose name is Miss Narges Mohammadi. She was a human rights activist and for her activity she has been taken to prison and received a 6-year imprisonment sentence. And however, even prison has not stopped her from being an active human rights activist.
این زن در حالت که تو زندانه یک کمپینی به راه انداخت کمپین حمایت از مادران زندانی که مهمترین خواستش این بود که مادرانی که همراه بچه‌هاشون تو زندانن این وضعیت واسه بچه‌ها خوب نیست بعد یک مهد کودک در کنار زندان درست کنید که این بچه‌ها برن اونجا و فقط شبا بیان توی سلول این خواسته اصلیش بود و این کمپین بسیار فعاله یعنی ببینید حتی دیوارهای زندان هم نمیتواند جلوی حرکت زنان ایران رو بگیره.
While she is in prison, she has founded a campaign. The campaign is called the Campaign of Mothers Who Are in Prison, and what she's demanding is that a daycare be built very close to the prison so that the little children who are in prison with their mothers can go to the daycare during the day and just spend the night with their mothers in prison, because she thinks that the prison environment is not good for kids, and she's right. You will see that not even the walls of prison have been able to keep her away from her activities.
Well, on that note, let's open it up for your questions for Dr. Ibadi. We have some volunteers who have microphones, so just raise your hand and we'll get through as many as we can. Yes, sir, right here.
Happy Nowruz.
Happy Nowruz.
I understand that the divorce rates in Iran is now high because the educated women will not put up with men having more than one wife. Is that having any impact?
آمار طلاق اخیراً زیاد شده، اما نه به اون حدی که در اروپا یا در آمریکا هست.
The statistics say that the number of divorces have risen, but the numbers are not as big as the US or Europe.
علت من مایلم کمی راجع به قوانین طلاق صحبت کنم.
I want to talk about divorce laws for a little while.
طبق قانون یک مرد میتونه هر وقت بخواد حتی بدون دلیل موجه زنش رو طلاق بده، اما طلاق گرفتن برای زن بسیار دشواره.
So pursuant to the laws of Iran, men can divorce their wives at any time that they wish. They don't even have to prove fault. So it's a no-fault divorce for men. But for women, it's very difficult to get a divorce.
و این یکی از موارد تبعیض‌آمیز در قوانینه که بعد از انقلاب هم تصویب شد، چون قبل از انقلاب تقریبا در موارد یکسان زن و مرد می‌توانستن درخواست طلاق بکنن.
And this is one of the discriminatory and bad laws which was passed after the revolution, because prior to the revolution, women and men could were actually equal in being able in getting a divorce.
Could you speak about the impact of religion in terms of the behavior of the government? In other words, is it primarily just a traditional military dictatorship, or are they really influenced by their interpretation of the Quran?
در درجه اول باید بگم که حکومت باید از مذهب جدا بشه تا دولت مردان به بهانه مذهب نتوانند مردم رو سرکوب کنند.
First, I have to say that governments have to be separate from religion so that politicians cannot use the emotions of the people and suppress people.
اما اینکه این قوانین آیا ناشی از شریعت یا تفسیر درستی از شریعت نیست، باید بگم که اسلام مانند هر دین دیگری تفسیرهای مختلفی داره.
But whether the laws that I talked about are based in Sharia law or not, I have to say, like any other religion, Islam has different interpretations.
ببینید، یک کلیسا همجنس ازدواج همجنسگرایان رو قبول داره، یک کلیسا نه. یک کلیسا سقط جنین رو قبول میکنه، یک کلیسا نه. همه اینا هم پیرو یک دین هستن. پس بنابراین اسلام هم چیز عجیبی نیست اگه بگم تفسیرهای مختلف داره.
So we see here that there are churches that accept same-sex marriage. There are churches that do not accept it. There are churches that accept abortion. There are churches that do not accept abortion. And these are all churches that are Christian churches that follow the same faith. Same thing is true about Islam.
روشنفکران مدرن اسلامی معتقدند که بایستی تفسیری از اسلام ارائه بشه که با زمان و مکانی که درش هستیم قابل انطباق باشه.
Modern intellectual Muslims believe that we have to come up with an interpretation of Islam which is compatible to the time and place that we live.
اونها میگن که قوانین شریعت دو دسته هستن. یه قوانینی که رابطه ما رو با خدا تنظیم میکنن مانند نماز خواندن روزه گرفتن اینها غیر قابل تغییر هستن یعنی تا زمانی که کسی خودش رو مسلمان میدونه باید اینطوری عمل بکنه
This group believes that the laws of religion or Sharia laws are divided into two categories. First is the category that regulates the relationship between human beings and God, like fasting, like praying. And of course, if one considers oneself a Muslim, so they have to observe such laws.
درست مثل کلیسا رفتن مسیحیان. اما حکومت‌ها حق ندارند. حکومت‌های اسلامی و یا گروه‌های اسلامی حق ندارند که کسی رو بابت عدم رعایت این دسته از قوانین مؤاخذه کنند. مانند کلیسا رفتن مسیحیان که هیچ حکومتی حق نداره کسی رو مورد سوال قرار بده که تو کلیسا میری یا نه. ولیکن اونایی که خودشون رو مسیحی میدونن خب میرن کلیسا و عبادت میکنن.
It is like Christians going to church. Christians go to church as they wish, but no government has the right to interrogate them or ask them why is it that you go to church or you don't go to church. It's the same thing. They shouldn't be interrogated as why they don't observe these laws.
در حالت که ما می‌بینیم در برخی از جاها این دست از قوانین اگر اجرا نشه مجازات میشن. مثلا در کشور من ایران اگر کسی روزه نگیره جرم مرتکب جرم شده و مجازات میشه.
Whereas we see in some countries, for example, my country, Iran, that if you don't observe these laws, you may be punished. It may be a criminal offense. For example, in Iran, if we don't fast during Ramadan, that could be a violation of criminal law.
که این کاملا خلاف اسلامه.
Whereas this is totally against Islam.
یعنی که هیچ کس حق نداره در این زمینه حرفی بزنه و دخالت بکنه این رابطه انسان با خدا
because no one has the right to intervene or ask questions about this is the relationship between human beings and their god
دسته دوم قوانین شریعت قوانینی است که روابط افراد رو در اجتماع تنظیم میکنه مثل قوانین خانواده مثل مجازات ها
But the second category of the laws are laws that regulate the relations of people in the society, like family law, like criminal law.
این دست از قوانین با حفظ روح قانون میشه اونها رو عوض کرد و منطبق با زمان و مکان کرد.
So in by keeping the spirit of the law, these kinds of laws can be changed and converted into compatible laws with the time and place that we live in.
که مثال های متعددی میشه زد مثلا یکی سنگساره
I can give you many examples but one of them is like stoning people.
روح این قانون این است که زن یا مردی که ازدواج کرده نبایستی سکس داشته باشه با فرد دیگری.
So the spirit of the law is that one who is married, be it a man or a woman, should not have a sexual relations with someone else.
اما اینکه مجازات چه بایستی باشد این بستگی داره به زمان و مکانی که درش هستی.
But what the punishment for that should be depends on the time that we live in and the location that we live in.
14 قرن قبل زنی که به شوهرش خیانت میکرد این توی عربا اینطوری مجازات میشد
14 centuries ago among the Arabs if a woman committed adultery that's what the punishment would be
توی اروپا حتی این گونه زنها رو میکشتند یا در آستش میسوزوندند
and we know that in Europe they set fire to them or even killed them
اما آیا الان همون مجازات ها رو باید به کار ببریم؟
But are we going to apply the same punishments today?
مسلماً نه.
Of course not.
روح این قانون این است که زنا یعنی کسی که همسر داره نبایستی با دیگری سکس داشته باشه اینو باید حفظ بکنیم.
So we are going to keep the spirit of the law meaning that if you are married to someone you shouldn't have sex with other people.
و مجازات مردی که با مرتکب این خلاف شده این است که باید بگیم زنش میتونه طلاق بگیره فوراً و یک خسارتی هم بابت یعنی پولی هم بابت خسارت روحی و صدمه روحی از شوهر بگیره.
So the punishment should be that the wife gets the right to divorce the husband without proving any other fault, and there will be some sort of compensation paid for pain and suffering.
یا زنی که به این ترتیب می‌بینید روح قانون حفظ شده اما با زمان و مکان تغییر کرده.
So the spirit of the law has been kept, but the punishment is compatible with our time and the location that we live.
به همین دلیل بسیاری از قوانینی که در قرآن هست الان می‌بینیم دیگه تقریبا اجرا نمیشه، مثل سنگسار که فقط در چند کشور محدود از جمله ایران اجرا میشه.
This is why we see that some of the religious laws that have been provided for in the Quran are not applied in all Islamic countries, only in some Islamic countries like Iran.
مسلمانان مدرن که تفسیر درستی از اسلام ارائه میدن رو به ازدیاد و در همه کشورهای اسلامی هم هست از جمله در ایران.
The number of modern Muslims who have a correct interpretation of the Quran is increasing and they even exist in Iran.
اما مهم این است که اینا چون در قدرت سیاسی نیستن حرفشون به جایی نمیرسه.
But since they're not in political power, no one listens to them.
و وظیفه دانشگاه‌های غرب این است که بلندگویی باشند برای صدای مسلمانان روشنفکر.
So it's the duty of the universities in the West to become the voice of the Muslim intellectuals.
و سعی کنید صدای اونها رو به جهانیان برسانید.
So try to bring their voice to the rest of the world.
و اجازه ندید که مسلمان‌های رادیکال تروریست جوان‌ها رو فریب بدن.
And don't let that the radical terrorist Muslims trick your young people.
مرسی. خیلی ممنون که امشب اومدین. Thank you for coming tonight. من سوالم اینه که به نظر شما بهترین آینده برای ایران الان چیه؟ What do you believe is the best future for the country of Iran right now?
اگر من قرار بشه از آرزوهای خودم صحبت بکنم، آرزوی من ایران دموکرات و سکولاری است که فاصله غنی و فقیر در اون خیلی کم باشه.
If I want to speak about what I wish, my wish is a democratic Iran where the government is secular and the gap between the rich and the poor is very small.
This man right here.
I wondered if this book, which is powerful, will be available in some way in Iran. Daughter-in-law Pardis Madavi wrote a book a number of years ago, which was banned, but she continues to get letters from the young people who have read it. So how can it, is it possible for it to be available in Tehran?
در ایران چاپ هر کتاب بایستی با اجازه دولت باشه و سانسور خیلی شدیده، به همین دلیل بسیاری از کتاب‌ها اجازه چاپ نمی‌گیرن.
Publishing books in Iran needs the permit of the government. Since censorship is very strong, many books cannot obtain that permit.
به همین دلیل کتاب من، کتاب اخیر من Until We Are Free توی ایران چاپ نخواهد شد.
This is why my recent book, Until We're Free, will not be published in Iran.
Ama internet باعث شده که سانسور به مقدار بسیار زیادی از بین بره. یعنی کتابهایی که اجازه چاپ بهش نمیدن، اینها رو برخی از نویسندگان توی اینترنت میذارن که از طریق سایت‌های مختلف توی ایران قابل خوندنه.
But of course, internet plays a big role in this regard and has resulted in limiting censorship in Iran. Many of the writers use the internet and publish online, and that's how people can have access to the book in Iran.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your commitment and your witness in the world. I'm sitting here thinking, what do you believe is the fundamental foundation to human rights?
پایه حقوق بشر از جهت قانونی اعلامیه جهانی حقوق بشر که بعد از جنگ بین الملل دوم نوشته شد.
So legally the basis for human rights is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights which came after the Second World War.
اما قبل از اعلامیه جهانی حقوق بشر، عدالت خواهی و اعتقاد به حقوق بنیادین بشر در جهان وجود داشته.
But even prior to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the search for justice and also belief in basic human rights has always existed in the world.
از جمله من میتوانم به منشور کوروش کبیر نام ببرم که حدود 2500 سال قبل نوشته شده و در آن حقوقی برای مردم پیش بینی شده که خیلی شبیه اعلامیه جهانی حقوق بشره.
For example, I can talk about the cylinder of Cyrus the Great that was written 2,500 years ago, and many rights have been predicted in that, which are very close to what has been provided for in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
در اعلامیه جهانی، در اعلامیه کوروش یک جمله هست که من بسیار علاقه دارم به این جمله، و کوروش در اون زمان که یکی از بزرگترین امپراتورهای جهان بود و بسیار قدرتمند میگوید من تعهد میکنم اگر مردم نخواستند سلطنت رو رها کنم.
So there is a sentence that I always quote from Cyrus the Great. You know that he was a very powerful emperor and he always said that I commit myself to leave my government in case people do not accept me.
You are now situated in London and you've set up a foundation. Tell me how you're raising funds and what do you intend to do with that money? How are you pursuing your activity?
This is a painful question.
باید بگم که من و همکارانم خوشبختانه با اعتقاد به حقوق بشر داریم کار میکنیم. یعنی ما درآمدمون رو از یه جا دیگه در میاریم و وقت آزادمون رو برای حقوق بشر گذاشتیم. حقوق بشر برای ما بیزنس نیست.
So what I have to say is that fortunately me and my colleagues we do not make money from human rights. We have other sources of income and human rights is not a business for us.
به همین دلیل خب ما یک محدودیت هایی داریم که همیشه داشتیم و سعی کردیم باش کنار بیه.
And this is why we always have limitations. We've had them always and have tried to work our way around it.
به عنوان مثال سایت ما خیلی خوشگل نیست و مخصوصا تو بخش ترجمه چون هزینه زیادی میبره خیلی قوی نیست.
For example, I can say that our site is not that appealing. And even when using translation, because we have to pay a lot of money to translators, it may not be that great.
شما در کتاب من میخونید که من پول جایزه نوبل رو بردم ایران، باهاش دفتر خریدم، تجهیز کردم و در اختیار کانون مدافعان حقوق بشر گذاشتم که انجی حقوق بشریه.
So in my book you're going to read, or if you have read it, you know that I used part of the Nobel Peace Prize money to purchase a condominium in Iran and turn it into my office where my NGO was located.
و قسمت دیگر این پول رو من در بانک ایران سپرده کردم که میدونید بانک ها به سپرده های ثابت در ایران خیلی سود خوبی میدن، 21% میدادن و از سود اون پول ما کمک میکردیم به خانواده زندانیان سیاسی که البته همه اینا رو دولت گرفت.
And of course, the balance of the money I deposited with the bank in Iran. As you know, banks paid very high interest at the time and still. And the interest that I received was approximately 21%. And I used that money in order to help the families of political prisoners. But unfortunately, my money has been confiscated as well by the government.
NGO ما تو تهران حدود 20 وکیل بود که همشون مجانی پرونده های زندانیان سیاسی و عقیدتی رو دفاع می کردن. ما حدود 6,000 پرونده رو مجانی دفاع کردیم.
There were 20 attorneys that worked in my NGO in Tehran. And we had approximately 6,000 cases that we defended, political prisoners and prisoners of conscience, and all of our work was pro bono work.
و متاسفم که همه وکلا تحت تعقیب کیفری قرار گرفتن. بعضیاشون زندانن که اسپردم، بعضیا زندانشون تموم شد مثل خانم ستوده و برخی ها مجبور شدن ایران رو ترک بکنن مثل خانم پراکن.
And unfortunately, I have to say that all of the attorneys who did this kind of work were criminally pursued by the government, and many of them have been imprisoned. Some of them did their time, like Ms. Nashrin Sotoudeh. Some of them had to leave Iran, like Ms. Parakhand.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, on that note, I want to thank all of you for being with us, and please join me in showing appreciation to Dr. Shireen Ebadi. And also to Shireen Ershadi, her translator, this evening. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.